even coronavirus can't keep us apart. Because we love you so much. From all of us at Bashani Radio app, stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay home.
Stay home.
And keep us blasting on your phones. Bashani Radio app. Always talking about everything. Download us free in the App Store. Kaboom! You heard? Call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby. Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.
It's the Benny Randall Show.
Benny
it's
Randall.
The Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show.
Welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And this powerful show brings you conversations with today's stars and tomorrow's legends. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Come on.
It's the Benny Randall Show.
Benny Randall.
It's the Benny Randall Show.
Benny
Randall. It's the Benny Randall Show.
Benny Randall
Show.
Oh, oh, oh. Benny Randall. Benny Randall Show.
We are back. You know, we got another extraordinary show before we get started. I'm Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. You know how we do every day. And make sure you join, download the Bashani Radio app at for the iPhones and the Android in your app store. And it's absolutely free. Today, we celebrate 3 million download subscribers to our app. Man, we got to get some hand claps for that. That's right. We celebrating over here. It's been a long time coming, many years making this happen. And we finally there, baby. We finally there. I want to thank all the media that gave us some love and extraordinary things that we've been doing. So, you know, we're about to take it to another level. Today, some extraordinary things happened. The first African-American VP pick, Kamala Harris. And Biden. She is on the Biden ticket. This is interesting. It's the first time it ever happened in history. And man, it's about to go down. The Republicans are already being real nasty. I heard some of them say this is like a episode of The Bachelor. So if this is like an episode of The Bachelor, what is Trump like? A bad episode of The Apprentice backwards. All right, that's just my opinion, okay? I'm Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator, and I said it. Today, we got the extraordinary, I call him, he's the king of politics, all right? Because he knows history, he knows current, he's been around for at least the last 400 years, I can promise you. He's been reincarnated several different times. My main man, The brother from another mother, I call him Mr. Dennis Speed. Mr. Speed, how you doing, brother?
I have to check after that introduction. Make sure all of my body parts are here. Since I'm 400 years old, you know, I have to just check. It seems like everything is here.
Hey, that's all that really matters, brother. That's all really matters. Yeah. If y'all know anything about me, if you've listened to me over the years, you know, we from time to time we've had Mr. Speed on, and he had a show a couple times, and he comes out, he disappears, he comes back, but he's always on point. I figure who better to talk about everything that's going on, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, when in this world of politics, because I tell you something, one thing I can guarantee most of the people think we need a change of some type. I don't care what it is, but we definitely need a change from what we have right now. Mr. Speed, what is your thoughts on Kamala Harris becoming the first African-American woman to be a VP pick on a major ticket?
Well, now, Mr. Randall, you have called me after a very long period of time. And as a consequence, you may have forgotten that I have a policy. My policy is to always tell the truth.
That's all we want you to do, brother.
That's right. I tell the truth irrespective of whom it may happen to offend or whom it may happen to corroborate, make happy. And therefore, we are going to take a look at this today. You ask me a question, and I will give you my answer.
That's all I want from you, brother. That's all I want. All right. See, the beauty of you, Mr. Speed, why I like, I enjoy having you on the show is very simple. When I met you so many years ago, I told you it is very important and it is very vital that the knowledge that you have from your generation, you do your best to pass it on to others. Looking at the times that we're in right now, black, white, and green has been protesting everything out there. Well, the Black Lives Matter, Green Lives Matter, whatever. But I can tell you there's something is going on in the air. And one thing I've always said to you, one thing I always wanted from you, and that's it. And that is the information that you have, that you share it and do not take it to the grave. So that's why I ask you and I call you, regardless of how you think or whatever. One thing I'm always sure of, you stick to the facts, and that's what I like. So with that being said, let's roll them. Let's go.
All right. So we have to therefore look at what we're dealing with. Kamala Harris, is the logical pick for Joe Biden, because if he were to have any chance whatsoever of credibly representing a potential defeat of Trump, this would be the pick that he would take. But there's a reason. And the reason is not the one that people are being led to believe. The reason has to do with the way that Kamala Harris relates to the Democratic Party establishment. The way that her relationship works in terms of her position as the former Attorney General of California, of course, U.S. Senator, U.S. Attorney from San Francisco, and her history. Now, you may remember that during the election, there was a moment where Tulsi Gabbard sort of went after Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And she stated some things. Yeah, she stated some things concerning Kamala Harris's record as a prosecutor. And she made the point that Kamala Harris had kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. That's actually almost a quote from Tulsi Gabbard. She said that Harris had blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so, put the evidence in. She said a few other things about the fact that she had prosecuted people on marijuana violations, so forth and so on. But the basic point that she was trying to make, Gabbard was making, was that although Harris said one thing about how she was for the rights of everybody, when she was actually in a position as a prosecutor, she sort of did something equivalent to what the Bill Clinton White House did vis-a-vis black people during the period of the 1990s, when they filled the jails with a number of black people, calling them super predators and so forth and so on.
And what I want you to do too, I want you from what you know, I want you to, let's go down her track record even before getting to this point, so we have a clear level of why you're saying what you say. You understand?
Right. Yes, exactly. So what this is referring to is her record and the California Attorney General's office. Now, remember, the state of California is the largest state in the country from the standpoint of population. So there's a lot of cases that go through. It's all true. But what I think is important about what Gabbert raised relative to the idea of what is happening today, why did Biden do what he did, is to understand that Kamala Harris comes out of something very specific in terms of her relationship to the earlier Obama campaign.
Okay.
She's one of the people that, of course, was an early campaigner for Barack Obama. That's all true. But the person who is the sponsor of Kamala Harris to Biden, the person who is the key person that was pushing that, is a woman by the name of Anita Dunn. You got to know that name because otherwise certain things about how this happened are not clear. Now, Anita Dunn has been, you know, sort of the key advisor to the Biden campaign. And it's important to know who she is because in terms of the way in which this pick has been made, she was pivotal.
So what role does she play, you know, to, you know, I want to get to the facts. What role does she play?
She's running Biden's campaign.
Okay.
She's running Biden's campaign. That's how, I mean, he's the one that, quote unquote, nominated Kamala Harris. So when you're dealing with that, you're talking about the senior advisors of the campaign. That's how it works.
Okay.
You're running a campaign. You're trying to get elected. So therefore, you're going to go through a group of people and you're going to look at electability. That's your concept. So what I'm telling you is that Anita Dunn is the person who, and Anita Dunn is important because of her role in the Obama presidency earlier. Then what we're looking at is we're looking at Obama 2.0. That's what's basically going on here. That's what this campaign is. Biden obviously has many challenges. I don't think anybody can deny that. I think anybody that hears him speak knows that. And so what the issue here is can you create a form of campaign that in some fashion is reminiscent of Obama 2.0? So that's what's going on here. Now, but Harris, remember, is a lawyer, obviously. She's a prosecutor.
Uh-huh.
So what's important is that the way this thing is really working is that these are White House insiders that are putting her in a position to be the active presidential manager. Because Biden is not going to, nobody is certain Biden can even get to the end of a presidential term.
Why? Because of his age?
Yeah.
Well, Trump is just as old. In fact, he looks more older and more out of shape. But who has been the oldest president in history?
It's not. That's not the problem. Although they are both very old. That's mm-hmm. true. The question is, can you deal with the actual office? No matter what you want to say about the issue of Trump,
mm-hmm.
the fact of the matter is that he is dealing with that office from the standpoint of being able to give his own press conferences, do his own tweets, and all that kind of stuff. Biden, on the other hand, nobody is clear precisely, and he's clearly not clear, as to what will happen, for example, when he gets to the debates. It's a straightforward problem. We don't have anything from him recently, anyway, in terms of the debates or any extended speech. You can't think of a case of that with Biden, or even, let's say, an extended interview.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple from a little bit earlier. So the point of the thing is that the vice presidential candidate, the reason I'm pointing this out is that candidate becomes extremely important. So the issue involved is the people making the selection here are not just Biden is saying what he thinks. Now he's picking his person and he's sort of running the show. He's not running the show. Who's running it are his campaign people. And the key person in this is this woman, Anita Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why she's important, all right, is first of all, she goes all the way back to Jimmy Carter. All right. She has been with the communications director of Al Gore 20 years ago. She started working for Obama back in 2006 before anybody even really knew he was running. She worked for his political action campaign committee, which was called the Hope Fund back in 2006, which is the actual beginning of his presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Dunn became a senior advisor to that campaign in 2008. Now, remember, Biden was the vice presidential candidate for Barack Obama. So if you have a person that was working with Obama from 2006, who's now the senior advisor to Biden in 2020, right? You're talking about people who've been working on a certain agenda and were successful in some degree, obviously back in 2008 because Obama got elected.
So what I want you to go to, I want you to dive into the pros and the cons of this situation. I understand that there's a big history from what you're telling me. So there's an incredible history here. So but I want to be able to get in some of this stuff in this time that we have. So I want you to answer to me. What are some of the pros and cons about this matchup versus that matchup? And how does it affect the people in general? Because the end result is the people. How are the people going to be affected? Because my understanding what Kamala Harris is very simple, that when she was a prosecutor, from what I understand, she was very harsh in putting people in jail. And a lot of those people that went to jail were black and brown people.
Exactly. So here's what we're dealing with. What I'm trying to say is that this is no change. She is trusted, and she's trusted to carry out a certain kind of policy. Let's remember that Biden is also known for this, because Biden was part of this whole policy of putting a lot of black males in jail also back in the 1990s. But this is only one example of it.
You mean when he was on the Obama ticket? Is that that's when he was?
No, this is prior to that. This is actually prior to this is actually during the period of the Clinton administration when he was in the U.S. Senate. This is earlier. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So he was one of the major sponsors of this. Remember, you had the whole three strikes and you're out kind of stuff that happened during the 1990s, and everybody. That's how the jails got filled with so many African American and also Latino males. And ultimately, you know, we have over 3 million people at this point in jail, the largest incarceration per capita of any place in the world. And that includes China. It includes every country in the world. And as somebody had once said to me, either we are the most repressive country in the world or we are the most criminal country of the world, one of the two. And the second doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. This is not different. She does not represent a difference, but she does represent something important in terms of the idea of if she were to be elected. And let's assume that they're actually in power. Let's assume this is after the election and after the constitutional crisis that's definitely going to happen. And after somehow, let's assume that sometime in January, somebody finally admits that one party or the other is president. Because right now we are looking at something like that. That may not evolve that way, but we're looking at something like that right now. Okay? You're not going to know who the president of the United States is the night of this election, as of right now. But let's assume that.
So you are predicting that there will be major chaos. Is that what I'm getting from when you say that statement?
I'm predicting there'll be a constitutional crisis, not just major chaos. You're going to go beyond major chaos. Major chaos would be a great improvement. You're going to have a constitutional crisis, because right now, neither of these sides is going to get a landslide victory. And if neither side gets a landslide victory, the other side is not going to admit defeat. That's what's going to happen. And whether it's blamed on the ballot,
all right,
blamed on something else,
we're going to hold you to that on this day right here. We're going to hold you to that, and we'll be able to go back in the app and that's hear what Mr. Speed said on Tuesday, August 11th at 8:53. You said that, one, there will be no landslide. Also, two, there will be total chaos because there will be no clear-cut winner. Am I on track right here?
No, I'm going to restate it so that it's exact and precise. Since you want people to go back and hear it, hear exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
unless you have a landslide by one of these two sides, and right now there is going to be no such thing, okay? Unless that occurs, there will be a form of constitutional crisis around this election. What does that mean? It means that the night of the election, nobody's going to concede, and that the election will be contested for days, if not weeks, afterwards. And that at some point, when one side concedes, the other side will still not be satisfied with that. I'm also saying, and I want this to be clear, that it's possible. I am not predicting this, but there is a high possibility that there may be an incident before the election in October, which will dramatically shift the entire circumstance of the election. And it could be of various types. It could be highly negative, something like a terrorist attack or something like that. Could be that. Or another form of incident, and I do have something in mind, which might be, for example, the beginning of a war. Those things are also highly possible as occurring in the 3 to 4 weeks prior to the election.
So, in other words, to cause fear, which will cause people to vote a certain way. Is that what I'm getting from you? Because people will do strange things when they are fearful. In fact, I heard somebody say to me earlier today, they said fear is man's only enemy. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, that was very powerful. Yes. Fear is man's only enemy.
Here's something for your people, for people, for the historical record. March 4th, 1933, when Franklin Roosevelt was sworn into office, he made the statement, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance." Okay? Mm. "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes efforts to convert retreat into advance." Mm. So you get to a point in a society where you need to move ahead, and people will not move. Not because of the particular thing they fear, but because of fear itself.
Wow. So in other words, that's why a lot of times people use fear to get people to do what they want to do. They also use fear to get people to allow certain liberties to occur, because if I tell you I want to come, for example, if I tell you I want to come in your house and you tell me I can't come in your house, but I tell you I need to come in your house to protect you from others that are trying to come in your house, and you say no. But then I come back to your house next week after someone has broken into your house and taken everything and told you I could have prevented this. Now you might be more open to let me come into your house. Is that what we're dealing with?
That's the protection racket. That's what used to happen back in the 1920s in Chicago. Mm. That's how they did it. They come by and they say to you, you know, "Oh, you got really nice picture windows here in your shop. Big glass windows. Be ashamed if somebody broke them out. Mm. Might be a good idea for you to take out insurance." You say no. Then what happens is windows get broken out. A few days later, same people come by and say, "Whoa, your windows got broken out. Now, see, we warned you. Might be a good idea for you to get that insurance, but it's going to cost you a little bit more now." You know, because the windows got broken out. So,
that sounds like Pookie them. But I'm going to just leave that there.
Yeah, well, that's the famous, that was the protection rackets of Chicago in the 1920s. Famous.
Oh, my goodness, man. That sounds like a Scarface movie. But all right, go ahead, Mr. Speed.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, look, the process that we have politically in the United States today is very, very difficult, because the presidency of the United States, many, many years ago, back before, actually around the time of 9/11, but actually before that, the period of the Clinton impeachment, 1998. Uh-huh. So we're really talking about 22 years ago. Presidency became a political plaything of very powerful financial forces, recognized that because of the way that financing had changed in the world, that the United States dollar had become subordinate to massive amounts, trillions of dollars of speculation. And this was going on in stock exchanges and all kinds of things, but it was dramatically changed by the emergence of the internet. When you had internet trading begin, which was approximately the period of 1993 through 95, 96. I'm not talking about the internet trading that individuals knew about. I'm talking about the internet trading that was being done by high-end Wall Street-based firms. This is even before NASDAQ takes off. We're talking before the dot-coms. And this all emerged in that period of about a quarter century ago. And so the American presidency became very important because the American dollar was being used for this purpose of speculation. But in order to actually get access to the American economy and turn it into a kind of casino, you had to deregulate the economy. So they did that during the Clinton years of 1998 and 99. When he went through that whole thing with Monica Lewinsky and all that other business, what people don't realize was happening was that Clinton, who was resistant initially to forms of deregulation of banking, then went along with all of that. And what it did was it meant that all of a sudden you could speculate, you could do things with the U.S. dollar that had been illegal only a few years earlier. Once that happened, the presidency and the running for presidency became a completely different proposition. And you went from a presidential race being $75 or $100 million to $1 billion race. That's what happened. And the reason was because by controlling or affecting that position, by changing the nature of the presidency, you could run this global casino. You were running it not based on Wall Street, but you were running it based on Wall Street, what's called the City of London. That's the London Financial Center, Amsterdam, right? These three centers, which were kind of historically have a certain role in the last couple of hundred years. So the presidency became a plaything. And when 9/11 happened, then the powers of the United States changed completely because of the Patriot Act, because of the War Powers Act, that the war powers that were granted to the president. Mm-hmm. And now what happened was everything in America changed. So today's presidential races, since that time, are really being run in terms of the candidacies by people within establishments. Now, Trump was something that was unexpected, as everybody knows. Everybody remembers election night.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was surprised. I would argue Trump was surprised. I think we all know.
Yeah, absolutely.
We know this. So what had occurred was something which was not expected in the way in which it occurred. And what this did was it punctured a hole in this broader general behavior that had existed from the time of the Clinton presidency, when he was blackmailed through the Monica Lewinsky thing, into 2016. What has now happened, what we are looking at, what we are living through right now, is an attempt by the financial establishment from Amsterdam, the City of London, and Wall Street to take back full control over this. But now you got the problem of the coronavirus. So you got all the problems. So it's a highly unstable situation in which a lot of different people are making calculations. But actually, the people of the United States are being completely left out. And the idea is, you know, we got trillions of dollars riding on this. We're now talking about $6 trillion. And what, you know, the Congress talks about $6 trillion like they used to talk about billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And we have got to bring this back under control. So this is what we are looking at over the next roughly 90 days. And that's the drama that we're actually living through. So the characters in the drama are now being picked. And so Kamala Harris has been brought on the stage as one of the characters in that drama.
So let me ask you something, Mr. Speed. Let me go, you know, I like to ask a different question. So are you saying that none of this stuff that we are seeing right now, whether it's Trump, whether it's Biden, or none of that, none of this is by coincidence? You're saying this is by design. Is that what you're saying to me?
Yeah, all of it's designed. I'm also saying to you, though, that the way this works, you've heard this saying probably, man plans and God plans, but God is the better planner. And so what you get here is everybody's scheming, right? And everybody thinks they know what they're doing. And everybody thinks they've got their scheme down in some intricate way. But actually, there's a whole other process that nobody controls. And the coronavirus process is an expression, only an expression, but it's an expression of the lack of control. So what Trump is, notice, see, Trump had a great transgression, a major violation against the establishment, which is the second day he came into office. Most people didn't check it out. Most people didn't hear it. What he said was, I'm going to take apart the 16 intelligence agencies. And what people never checked out was this guy Flynn that he had, who was the person that he was going to bring in as national security advisor. That's the first guy that went out.
Michael Flynn. Is that what you're speaking
Michael
of?
Michael Flynn.
Okay.
Michael Flynn had been in the Obama administration. He had opposed the Syria war. But then what they had discussed, what he and Trump had discussed, was that Flynn was going to do an audit of the Department of Defense and an audit of the intelligence agencies. If he had done that audit, he would have found approximately $1 trillion unreported in various forms of military and related spending. That's what he would have found. And so what had to be done from that point, you could not risk that Donald Trump would do this. Because the reason they were doing it when he came in, what he's thinking is, hey, I got to make a few deals here and I need money. And I need money to do something to deliver on the campaign promises. Let's take a look at the intelligence agencies because I got some good information that a lot of this is not been authorized. So the war has been about that. Many other things have happened. I mean, I'm not talking about all the different things that have happened. All kinds of stuff has happened. There's a lot of policy things. But just so people understand what is really at stake here is that there are people that know that what you've had been going on is this massive casino going back to the 90s, which sort of inflated the American economy while people were getting poorer and poorer on the bottom. Schools were getting worse, all that kind of stuff. The roads, the highways were all crumbling. The hospitals were being shut. All that was happening, you had the suicide problem, you had impoverishment, but up at the top, for the top basically 1-5%, they're just getting like crazy rich. And so the idea was that this casino was going to go on indefinitely, but then you had the problem of 2008. Remember that one? Where everything almost went bankrupt. A whole system almost shut down in 2008. It's almost bankrupted back in 12 years ago. That never got fixed. And so if anybody begins to look into the way in which the United States has actually been being governed, if you even hint that you're going to do that, you not only have to go, but everything that you represent has to be shut down. Now, Harris is trusted by the establishment, just like Biden is trusted because Biden is not going to be running anything.
So in other words, you're trying to say, my understanding, I just want to, so my listeners understand, and just in case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Benny Randall Show. We are talking politics with Mr. Dennis Speed right here on the day when the vice president pick has been announced by Joe Biden, and that's Kamala Harris, the first African-American woman to be on a major party ticket. So we're going back so that we can go forward. All right. So we're speaking to Mr. Dennis Speed right here on the Bashani Radio Network. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.
All right, if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Benny Randall Show right here on the Bashani Radio app. You can download it free in iPhone and for your Android. Or if you don't have a phone because you're from the old school, you can listen online at BashaniRadio.com. And it's not a game, it's a lifestyle. We're speaking to Mr. Dennis Speed, and we're talking about politics. Mr. Dennis Speed, please continue from where we left off.
Yeah, basically what I'm saying is that we all, the American people are in a very interesting situation. Because of what happened with the coronavirus, you can now credibly call everything into question, and you can credibly say, well, due to circumstances beyond our control, we got people that can't work, we have people that can't go to school, and we have a system that is beginning to strain at the edges because we can't afford to pay people unemployment and this and that forever.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if we try to go back to work and we got this virus spreading around, well, then people are going to get sick. So clearly, something completely different than ever happened has got to go on. I mean, that's just credible. That is just a real circumstance that actually confronts not just the American people, but people all over the planet. You know, so today Russia's saying they got a vaccine, which may work. You know, other people are working on stuff. But even if these things work, look at what you got as the problem. You got to manufacture this. Then you got to, is it 40% effective? Is it 20% effective? Is it 90? Nobody knows. So you got a circumstance, and this is important in terms of the president or who becomes the president or how the country is governed, whether it's by, you know, the congressional side of it or the presidential, however. Because over the next days, the next weeks, you know, what the decisions are that are made affect everybody. And so it's very relevant to be talking about this, but it's also very important in talking about it to be honest, to be truthful, and to let people know that, you know, listen, if you really want to see something different, you're going to have to do something different, because these people ain't going to see that. They're not, these decisions that you're hearing about are not sufficient. As a matter of fact, they're not even directed often to changing the real circumstances of life that we are actually confronting.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you something, Dennis. Do you not, what is your thoughts, you know, speaking of that, because what is your thoughts of the movement of the younger people right now in this movement, regardless of, you know, it seems like there, you know, there's not a real strong agenda behind it, other than to want to defund the police and things like that. But what do you see something different in this particular time and in moment that has been different from any other things that have happened? Are you seeing that? Do you see anything different, or do you think it's just the old way of doing what people do?
Just in the interest, right, in the interest of telling your other viewers who don't know how far back we go.
Right.
It was in October of 2006 that I said to you that young people were going to become the primary political catalyst worldwide. And at that time, nobody was saying that. And I said that, and of course, it began to happen. So if you ask me about what's going on now, I'll put it like this. That exact same thing is about to happen, but for much different reasons.
Explain, please. And be, I have a younger audience, so I want you to be a little clear in what you're saying.
Let's just be very concrete. Let's just take two kinds of questions of social justice. There's, of course, the issue of the police matters. But then there's another question of social justice, which is what you see around this virus. Because a lot of it, people keep using this term comorbidity factors. Okay, they keep saying this term. So, well, there's the virus, and then there's people getting sick because of co-factors. Okay, but what are they? Well, frankly, they are living in any city in America. That's the co-factor. Because you got asthma cases, you got the problem of dirty water, like in Flint, Michigan, or Newark, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You got the problems of the drug addiction thing, the violence in the cities, and so forth. Yet they call these morbidity cofactors, right? You have dietary problems all over the place, right? So, but these are factors, these are expressions of social inequity, social injustice. And they're not seen that way, except the death rates tell you how this works. So coming back to young people, well, if we take what we're told, let's assume it's true, that less young people contract the virus than older people. At least right now, that seems to be true.
Well, no, I've recently heard that that's totally different, because now that the younger people the millennials who seem to be going out and trying to, not being as cautious, they tend to be getting it more now than they first thought they could get it. You understand what I'm saying?
Well,
that's what the scientists were saying, that, it's not as what they thought about it before is not actually true based on what they're going through now. And on top of the younger people getting it, they're also getting it with a more harsh element of it, causing other things to flare up along with that.
Because,
you understand?
Right. Well, there's another element here. Right. And this is the key thing. You'll get mutations.
Right.
You're going to get mutations because that's just the remember, this is a coronavirus, which means it's like the common cold. That is, that's why people were making the mistake of thinking that there would be less of it in the summer. Because what the deal was, that it comes from a the pool of coronaviruses are like the flu is a coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So because that's just the name for a whole set of school of viruses. So
right, this strain of it is been the most unpredictable, because I looked on my Lysol cans and they even had it printed, fights the germs of coronavirus, right? But they wasn't talking about this one. They were just talking about a different strand of that. So that and that's been on cans forever. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's right. That's precisely right. So the people are tending to be, if not on purpose confused, by negligence, confusion is being allowed to spread or to be maintained in the society. So now young people are going to have to step up and deal with that. Let me give you an example of what I mean. You need a worldwide healthcare platform for prevention of disease, not even treatment, but for prevention of disease. Because when you have it's now become a pandemic, which is different than an epidemic. An epidemic is, disease gets widespread, but a pandemic means it's worldwide. If it's worldwide, here's your problem. If you don't solve that disease everywhere in the world, then it will come back to everywhere in the world. Because what the problem is that it's not just that it is continuing to infect people. It's that it's mutating. So that even if you get a vaccine against one version of the disease, that doesn't guarantee you have a vaccine against the second version, a new version.
Right.
So the only way, right? Okay, fine. So now young people are the only people on the planet that are free enough to both demand that and secure that, make that occur. Everybody old is going to say we can't afford it, which is foolish because actually the older people, the people that are going to be dying at the fastest rate. But that's what they're going to say. And so I'm saying that because the idea of somebody being killed one by one by somebody who is a brutal person, maybe even a Klansman who's masquerading as a policeman, that's a bad thing. But that's a very easy thing to dramatize. When you get to a pandemic, you want to see injustice, just check out any ghetto, any favela in Brazil. They call them favelas there. Mm-hmm. And look at what's happening in those places. Or in Lagos, Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Okay, where you got 20 million people in that city and you don't have the necessary hospital care. So that's a place where in Africa, remember the average age in Africa, the median age that they call it, is about 20. It's the youngest continent in the world. So, and there are 1.2 billion people there. So in terms of young people on the planet, young people are going to have to take the initiative, and I think will, to recreate a completely different, just system. And it's going to start with health because it has to.
Absolutely. So let me go. We got about 15 minutes left. You were supposed to be here 30 minutes, and we passed that. That shows you how much you talk. All right. So I want to hit some key things right here before you get out of here. And I just want to know your thoughts on it. Kamala Harris. She received strong criticism over her background in law enforcement. Right. Some progressives have taken umbrage with Harris casting herself as the progressive prosecutor, pointing to a number of her actions in the San Francisco district attorney and as the California's top cop in the Senate, as she's been leading the voice on criminal justice reform and help author Democrats' police reform bill earlier. Can you just give us some bullet points of her record when she was a prosecutor?
Well, the essential thing that she got criticized, I mean, there's several areas she got criticized in, so let's just say something about this. But the essential thing had to do with the fact that there were some clear cases, like the death penalty cases that were referenced, where in fact there was evidence that needed to be introduced that would free people who were innocent. And she was slow on that. That was one thing. The marijuana cases are, you know, you could debate it because in one sense there was a transition going on as a whole around these cases. She was part of that transition, so forth and so on.
Uh-huh. Sorry about that.
Man. What are you doing to me?
No. we're in the studio and we things are going on in the Bashani studios because we moved the new studio.
I see, right, because you are a busy man with a busy enterprise. And it sometimes spills over because of the level of its success. I understand.
This is what we're doing.
Control.
Absolutely, yeah. So while I'm in this part of the studio, I have Kevin over there doing some things, that's one, and it's just going off and, in between. So, but we're making it happen, though. That's what we do.
No. Everything is good. Everything is good. I'm glad the level of your success. But just going back to the thing, which was probably the most controversial. That has to do with the prison industrial complex, as it's been called. Mm-hmm. That is, and this, many people have been calling attention to that for a long time now. But what happened was that California, being as large as it is, the most populated state in the country, has a very large, significant prison population, which has been incorporated into this sort of, it's a combination. You can't quite call it slave labor, but it's almost that.
Mm.
And so the concept here, let me run it to you in terms of an alternative, which she has not proposed. I'm going to propose to you so that the people, so we put some continuity in because you need that. Let's assume we're looking right now at coronavirus. And as you know, many places, the prisons are a problem for this because of the spread. And people who have nonviolent offenses should be let out because otherwise they can die of a disease. So although they went in on a nonviolent offense, they're going to get a death penalty or could get a death penalty. All right, suppose you're going to let them out. What you would want to do, because, hey, well, how am I just going to let people out? What are they going to do? Well, then that's true. So what you should do presently is have a health extension service. You're going to organize this by taking the Army Corps of Engineers, which is right now building hospitals and emergency hospital units all over the country, and you would attach to the Army Corps of Engineers a combination of retired veterans who were, which you located in the various cities. You put that and even some Army Reserve units. And what you would do is you would have prisoners go into a kind of transition program, almost like a halfway house thing, but where they would be retrained as health extension agents. This means not that they're doctors, but depending, of course, on it, you obviously have to do contact tracing. You got to do all the stuff on the distance. You need to test people. There's all sorts of things. Now, if you now put them into that and you have some basic level of compensation that they're getting for that, so that what happens is that you're actually doing something which is having the impact, of, not to mention that one of the things that they could be involved in is hospital construction. Much of it would be emergency construction. That's what they were doing, for example, in China. That partially allowed them to get control over the virus very quickly. So there's a lot of stuff, not to mention there's also other kinds of outside construction. But you don't do it as prison labor, in other words. You do it in conjunction with non-prison-based programs, largely based out of the Army Corps of Engineers. Why would you do this? Because your cities like San Francisco or Oakland, for example, right? Or in the case of New York City, straight from Brooklyn, some of these other areas. Instead of you having a situation where you are trying to crowd everybody into the same overcrowded facilities, you either expand the facilities that you have or you build new ones. Okay, that's something that Kamala Harris has not put forward. But it would be an obvious thing that she would put forward with that former prosecutor background that she would have if she were thinking about how you would actually go after resolving the present crisis for prisoners, particularly African-American and Latino prisoners that have nonviolent offenses. That's the kind of problem that you see in a candidate. If she adopts that, well, that's something different. So there's a good challenge that people could give her as a candidate.
But also we got to remember, though, she's the vice president and not the president. You see what I'm saying? So it's the same way as the whole time Trump has been president. I really haven't heard Mike Pence do anything other than he's in charge of the coronavirus. But yet the president comes up and talk about the coronavirus from paperwork that he's got from other people. And honestly, I think he just put him in charge of the coronavirus, so it make him, if anything goes wrong, it'll make him not look bad.
But you may not remember Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney basically ran the White House. He ran the White House virtually from the vice president's office. So actually, the power, that's one of the reasons that's not well known by people, that the power of the vice president and that vice presidential office was significantly expanded during the 1980s and 90s. And then Cheney took advantage of that power. It's an extremely powerful office. But by the way, even before, I'm saying right now, tonight, what could be done? It could be done by Donald Trump too, right? And in fact, let me just point out the following for people. You see, I am saying that there has been a campaign against the Trump presidency way before, and it had very little to do originally with Trump. But when he said that thing about investigating and auditing the intelligence agencies, it was all out war. However, today, tonight, where we are talking, somebody should put forward the program that I just said for how to deal with urban America. Urban America is faced with the potential of massive death because of coronavirus and the conditions that cofactor conditions, as they're called, which are dirty water and all the other things we said. These conditions have to be addressed. You need a $1 to $2 trillion announcement of a massive infrastructure program based around health infrastructure and also related infrastructure, like, for example, redoing the water systems of several of these cities. you have the problem of the homeless, which has become a big deal in New York City recently. You probably know about them moving those people up into the Upper West Side all of a sudden, and nobody even knew they were coming up there. So that the way for, I think, people who are listening to us right now to think about any of this is, okay, well, I don't know about the background of this person or that person. I do know this. I do know that there is an urgent need for us to have millions of Americans involved in gainful employment instantly so that they can maintain themselves in a circumstance where 40 million, 50 million people were suddenly unemployed in this country. And now the unemployment has run out coming from the federal government. So if something's not done, do people lose their houses? Do the people have any basis to keep their businesses? But this is an urgent crisis.
Right. But Mr. Speed, no matter who is elected in there, and I've always said this long time ago too, as many times as you talk, if people go back and listen to some of the conversations we've had before, and that is, if you was broke when they got in there, you're going to be broke when they're in there. So waiting on that part of it, no. Change only happens when you get the right type of minds inside of there. And right now, one thing I do appreciate about all the other young people and some of the younger senators like Ortiz, is that they think different. And I think until you start to get people, the old fogies out of who basically have these jobs for a lifetime. One, I think we talked about it a while back, and that it is one, I think your number of years in Congress should be limited. I think you shouldn't be able to be in there for the next 25, 30 years. Because it's easy to get stuck in your own mindset and way of doing things, no matter who is talking to you.
I got a completely different view of this.
Go ahead.
A completely different view. Let me tell you what it is. See, first of all, I don't know that because somebody is young that they have any idea at all. Take, for example, Ocasio-Cortez or some of these other people. This whole Green New Deal thing, which Kamala Harris is a big proponent of, that's not going to work. And it's not going to work for a simple reason. If you look at the cities and you look at where we are right now tonight, what I'm telling you is that if we get to October and we do not have a gigantic financial crisis, we're going to be very, very, very lucky. I think you're going to get you can get a crisis bigger than the one in 2008.
But we already have a gigantic crisis, Mr. Speed. There's about 40 million people out of work right now, and there is no deal to help the people that where the unemployment is just ran out, and he wants to offer an executive order for $200 less, $300 from the government and $100 from the state, which they don't have because they've never been refunded or reimbursed for the money they spent just fighting coronavirus. So they're already in the hole. So we already have, and the commercial market here in New York City, Mr. Speed, is going to be incredible because a lot of those companies are not coming back because they're finding that they can be more efficient and more effective and leave the people home. So therefore, that's higher profits and lower overhead. So although you may have some companies that come back into that world or whatever, I think it's going to be a long time before you see pushing everybody back into that office per se when they found out that they can make just as much money with these people's homes. So we already have a gigantic financial problem. It ain't coming up. It's already here. It's just who is it affecting now? So I'm trying to understand that when you say that.
I'm telling you that you can get to a point where your credit card doesn't work. That's what I'm talking about. I mean the real deal. And I mean that can happen very quickly. Now, I'm not predicting that will happen. The reason I'm not predicting that will happen is because of the panic that will set in, including in the establishment, about what the political implications of that will be. So it may not be allowed to get to that point. But you're dealing with a circumstance like that in the short term. I mean a full seizing up of everything.
Of all financial. So we should go back to keeping money under our beds? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm trying to say that you could end up with something like a war overnight. A big one overnight. Because the power of a system, you cannot indefinitely just crank out money when you are producing very little, as we are in the United States. There simply comes a point where your money is worthless. And you have basically converged upon that point. So that real actions are going to be taken. And it's going to happen in the next 90 days. And if they aren't taken, then you may kick the can down the road. You know, you can do that so that you don't have, you know, something which is manifest right now. Mm-hmm. But it will be manifest within the next 1 to 2 years, no matter what you do.
What is this rumor that's around the internet that's saying once Trump finds out, which he's found out today, that Biden has a woman in black, that he's going to find a way to get him a woman on his ticket?
I don't know that Trump really responds to anything remotely like that.
You don't think he's capable of just being one way one day and then finding a way to get Pence out?
I think that there is no. Let me put it very clearly with respect to Donald Trump. Donald Trump was unexpected. What he does is unexpected.
Even for himself.
What he does, right, and if you try to fit him into the electoral strategy that anybody else comes up with, you always are wrong. And the point there is that, I'll tell you what, for example, would make the biggest difference for Trump. The biggest difference for Trump would be made if it were proven, and it were exposed as proven, that Russiagate never happened, that there was no Russian involvement in that thing in the election. And the reason that would be the biggest thing that could happen for him is the Democratic Party is toast if that is proven. Now, that's one of the reasons his thing with the intelligence agencies becomes so important. See, in other words, here's what the problem is for everybody that's listening to me. What you're seeing is all theater. It's all like in The Matrix of 20 years ago, the famous Matrix movie. None of this stuff is actually real. It's just actors who are given roles. And sometimes what happens is that the actor actually begins to create their own part in the play. Now, at that point, the whole play starts to change. But it's still a play. And what you're dealing with in the case of the Trump presidency is that this is one of the players that decided to start to play his own role. And this means that there is an unpredictable factor, two unpredictable factors, presidency itself and the coronavirus. And these two things are now dancing in this circumstance, where people are now trying to take all the normal ways they manage stuff, right? And the normal schemes they have to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to match these up with these two unpredictable factors. So what ends up happening is you're in a situation where you say, well, you know, every time I go in my house, I turn on the lights, right? I switch on the lights and the lights come on, right? That's what you do every time you go in your house. Except now you walk in, you switch on the lights and the water comes on. Lights don't come on. The water comes on.
That's some new hood stuff.
And that's what the problem is. That's what people are in.
That's some new hood stuff right there. You know, you turn on the lights and the water come on. Yeah, that's some real hood stuff right there, okay. Boy.
You know, so, I mean, that's what we're in, okay? So, you know, it's always fun talking about this, but I would tell you that youth will once again be the decisive factor. It's going to start right now. It may or may not affect the election. See, that might happen. But regardless of the election, young people are aware the fundamental changes are going to occur over the next 2 years.
Wow. Whew. All right, Mr. Speed, like always, you can go through it and you go through it quick. We've been on here 1 hour and 4 minutes, and he still ain't. He just got warmed up, ladies and gentlemen. But that's what happens when you bring Mr. Speed on here. Mr. Speed, your final thoughts, sir. We definitely going to have you come back, because I tell you, he will go through some time like it ain't nobody else, you know, but that's what we love about you, man, because you take us back and then you bring us up, and that's what it's all about. Let me get your final thoughts on what does this all mean, and just for fun, who you think will win?
Well, first of all, what I want to say is I think what you're doing is what really is where the victory is. You're creating an independent platform in which people are able, such as myself in this case, to say to large numbers of people, even all around the world, things that are otherwise inaccessible. So why is that important? I believe, as you know, Mr. Randall, because we've talked about it from even a decade ago, I believe in what's called taking back your government. I believe that what the whole issue is that people have misinterpreted the United States Constitution to look at the Bill of Rights rather than figure out the duties of the American citizen. Mm. So what happens is that they have conceded power to individuals and institutions that really they have themselves. So if you look at this question, who's going to win? I have to say that I have no serious idea about that. I think that's why I said
for fun, but just for the humor us. And because we are in such a climate, I mean, come on, they painted Black Lives Matter in the middle of the street. They painted in front of Trump's building. They painted it all around the country. So we are in a different time. Something's happening. Something occurred. Black men are still being killed, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Just for the fun of it. You want me to tell you what I think is going to happen? Okay. Oh, I mean, from the fun of it.
For some reason, I think I know what you're about to say, and this is probably going to be scary. I think I know what you're about to say. Go ahead.
You know what I'm going to say, right? Trump.
For some reason, I got that feeling from you that that's what you would say. You know what I mean?
Trump. Because the reason, okay.
And ladies and gentlemen, just for the sake of here, you know, the opinions expressed here are just those of the guests and the hosts, and not necessarily that of Bashani Radio, their affiliates, their associates, their sponsors, you know. And I want to be mindful to let you know, all the way up to this point at 1 hour and 7 minutes, that's when Mr. Speed was sane. He just went crazy in the last question. So I want you to be fully aware of what just happened. Go ahead, Mr. Speed, and proceed.
No, it's very simple. It's very simple. Why? Okay. You said for fun. So let's have some fun. Because of the unpredictability. See, everybody else tries to deal with, you know, putting blocks on top of blocks.
Uh-huh.
Trump is not putting blocks on top of blocks. Trump is knocking blocks off.
That's because he don't know how to stack them.
But he's
a grown kid. All the adults have left the house, so you know if the adults leave the house.
But if there's an earthquake going on and you try to stack blocks, see, then that doesn't work. So, and that is the question, is that our circumstance? Coronavirus indicates one sort of aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, So in other words, that's the nature of it. However, what do I actually think? I believe there's a constitutional crisis coming. That's what I think is going to happen. I think you're not going to know on the night of the election who won. I think that what's going to happen, and I don't think it's going to be accepted by either side. So just in terms of, you know, right? But
eventually some people say they believe that Trump will have to be escorted off the premises.
I know what they think, but there's another possibility, and they don't want to entertain it, just like they didn't before. Remember?
Right. Oh, that Biden may not win.
Yeah. Well, Biden may not even be make it that far. I mean, he might and he might not.
Hmm.
What if he drops out?
No. You mean drop out the presidency? Or just drops out of the earth?
No, well, no. Suppose, right? We said for fun, right? We're in overtime right now. So
right.
Now we're just talking like we're at the bar. What happens if Biden decides, you know what? It's probably not so good for me to try to do this. Kamala, just take the presidential. You know, why don't you just do it?
That would be gangster.
Yeah, you see? Then that's a whole other thing.
Now I like that scenario.
Of course you like that scenario.
I like that scenario. So automatically, you know, because you got to remember, too, I was, and this is interesting right here that you say that. I was listening to Byron Allen talk about when he was trying to acquire the Weather Channel. Mm-hmm. And one thing that was very interested in is that they didn't want to sell it to him. All right. So, but he had somebody who didn't look like him of the other persuasion mm-hmm. who stepped in and made sure he had the opportunity to even be there to even put in an offer, a bid, and that person backed them with the funds and everything
right.
for this deal to go through. And that person had enough pull to say, hey, let this happen. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
So when you say that about
yeah.
Kamala Harris, we
right.
already seen what will happen if she tried to do it on her own. She were good.
Right.
And that before, it's so funny because Trump said, oh, she's very smart. She's very intelligent. And Trump actually,
right.
One of her campaigns when she was running for, I think, one of the Senate seats, he actually donated money to her. But now that
sure.
she's on that ticket, you know, she's the most miserable and nasty. I mean, he already done made a thing. She's the most miserable and nasty person he's ever seen in his life. That his same scenario, you know what I mean? And he say, you know, she's not going to help Sleepy Joe in that scenario. But let me get to the point
yeah.
right quick before
yeah.
I lose the point. And that is, that will be a hell of an alley-oop.
Yeah, well,
and it will be that one that you couldn't stop because you have a chain of command.
Yeah, well, you have the point. Right. The point here is that you're in an area, a zone of unpredictability. That's really what I'm trying to say. I happen to have a very particular view of the presidency. I think the presidency has been under assault. I'm all for a full audit of the intelligence agencies because I think they are nefarious. I think they do tremendous evil. I don't believe that the Russia hack actually happened. I have reasons to not to believe it. I happen to know somebody who can prove that it didn't and has been talking that way. So I believe that the American people need the truth. And I think that if you had the truth, see, many things would be different in this country. And young people, in my view, are the way you're going to get the truth. I believe that's what's going to actually happen. I don't know that it will happen within the election cycle,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not that worried about that. I'm not worried about that. I think young people are going to take us to the bridge, so to speak. They're going to take us across the bridge.
Mm.
And that's my job. I mean, in terms of my own orientation, I believe that's what my purpose would be to transmit whatever, anything I learned, I know, to them. So that they get, you know, you have real justice, real equity. And you get past, as you already said, these old, tired, worn out, dead ideas.
Absolutely.
That hang like a dead hand on the brain of the living. That's what you got to get rid of. Got to get that hand, that dead hand off the brain of living young people.
Very, very powerful. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, you know we'll be having Mr. Speed back. This is the first time Mr. Speed will actually be in the Bashani Radio app, all right, where we fully independent, we fully in control. We don't have the answer to anybody, so we're going to see what happens now. Boy, this is going to be awesome. So make sure you download the Bashani Radio app free for Android and your iPhones, or you can tell Siri you want to play Bashani Radio, or you can tell Alexa you want to play Bashani Radio, or you could tell your mama you want to play Bashamity Radio. No matter who you tell, they going to know who we are, because that's what we do here. All right. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And it was such a pleasure talking to you, Mr. Dennis Speed. So, you know, we'll be having you back. Right, brother?
Well, thank you very much. And I certainly would be happy to come back.
All right, Mr. Speed. And make sure you download the app, too, if your phone.
I'm doing it right now.
You still got the flip phone or you got a regular phone now?
No. We'll tell people that story some other time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., right here on the Bashamity Radio app, or listen online at BashamityRadio.com. It's not a game, it's a lifestyle. Until next time, remember, it is your business to know. I love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night.
Even coronavirus can't keep us apart. Because we love you so much. From all of us at Bashamity Radio app, stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay home.
Stay home.
And keep us blasting on your phones. Bashamity Radio app, always talking about everything. Download us free in the App Store. Kaboom!